Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 2021 offers, contact your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850-715-815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Joe at RT.ie. Now, just a little prologue in that the issues that our listeners want to raise at the start of today's programme are very difficult for a lot of people, especially young people, and indeed for families who have had somebody in their family who died from suicide. Ben Connaughty contacted us. Ben, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe, I think.
Yeah, why did you contact us?
I contacted Joe just we're doing a fundraiser just in our just in our local football team in Killage and Crosskeys in Cavan, and we're doing in November. Just in the last couple of months, we lost two friends and neighbours to suicide, Jason Colby in October or September, sorry, and Matthew Gaffney in October. So just two young lads, 19 and 21, in the space of a month, and just shock to the whole system, just left the whole community. We're only a small, all went to the same primary school. We all live within a couple of kilometres of each other, and it's just hit us very hard as a community. So we decided to do a fundraiser for SoSad in Cavan. And we've raised 12 grand so far, and all footballers, there could be 40 or 50 of us doing this. It was just to raise awareness about men's mental health and hopefully do something so that this doesn't happen again, you know.
And as you say, you're in a small community of Crosskeys and Cavan. The two young men, Jason and Matthew, 21, 19, they died, as it happened, four weeks apart. And they lived quite close to each other. And you're saying this came as a complete and total devastation to the small community.
Yeah, the thing with the two boys is they're both smiley lads. You see them out in your local pub, you know, they're two of the nice lads you'd ever meet. It's not one of them cases where two boys were sitting up in a room, and it's just a shock. Like, you know, we're only small, we're not prepared for something like this, you know. Well, I don't think anyone can be, but...
Yeah. And what are you trying to do in their memory, Ben?
Well, we're doing this November. We just want to raise awareness, really, that, you know, even though boys can be, you know, they can be happy and that and put on a brave face, but behind it all, like, it's just, it's okay just not to be okay. Just look for help, you know, like, even ring a boy. Like, I take 1,000 phone calls from a fellow with a problem rather than show that one phone call on a Monday morning where somebody tells you that this is after happening and you have to make them calls. You know, you take a phone call from any fella with a problem and try help them, or even if it's 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever, you know, you do everything you can rather than the outcome that we've come across, you know.
As you say, Ben, I take 1,000 phone calls from somebody who wanted somebody to talk to, rather than that one phone call on a Monday morning, whatever, to tell you one of the great young local lads had passed away and died by suicide. I think it's an incredible way to put it. I take 1,000 phone calls talking to people. Bernard Gaffney is there as well. Bernard, good afternoon. Hello,
Bernard.
How are you doing? And it's your brother Matthew who died, and he was 19, so condolences. Tell us a little bit about Matthew, Bernard.
Myself, Michal, my older brother, and Matthew, the youngest, we grew up in outside a village called Crosskeys in Cavan, if anyone knows it. Lived a very simple life. Mother and father were farmers, so we spent most of our time outdoors. We went to the local school together in Crosskeys. We played football since we were 6, 7, 8 years of age with the local football club. And everything was pretty normal. We went to secondary school. Matthew went to St. Pat's. Me and Michal went to Breffni College. When Matthew finished school, he took on carpentry apprenticeship, and he was very happy at that. He had long commutes every morning, maybe he travelled an hour and a half, generally to Dublin and yeah. other places too, and he was gifted with his hands. And in around the time COVID came in and worked right up, he was doing maintenance work on a local farm. So I would describe Matthew as he seemed very happy in his work. I would describe Matthew as a tough person, you know, physically and mentally. I describe him tough. And
you would have, I know he's your younger brother by 3 years, so that means, would you have shared a bedroom?
Yeah, me and Matthew, we slept in the same room for probably 10, 12 years maybe.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you went into the room at night and he was in bed and you flicked on the light.
Oh, good luck. Good luck.
You knew about it.
I know the feeling.
You know.
And you're grown up.
Yeah, so, yeah, sometimes we just talk general what he did that certain day at work and what I did at work that day. And very, very normal kind of stuff.
And did he lose? You said he was studying, he's an apprentice carpenter, studying to be a carpenter. But the lockdown, the buildings closed, you mentioned Dublin. Did he lose, did the carpenter apprenticeship, was that suspended, so to speak, during the lockdown?
Yeah, so he worked for a local farm there doing maintenance, and he stayed there then right up until he took his own life. He worked with two of his cousins on the farm, which were John and Terence, who were like brothers to him. Yeah. And in my eyes, he was so happy going over there. He didn't want to, well, it's not that he didn't want to, but he, you know, it was so handy being close to home.
Oh, it makes a big difference, yeah.
He enjoyed it.
And would it have been obvious of the darkness that was overcoming Bernard? Matthew Bernard?
Definitely not. Definitely not. I mean, he was out with his friends socialising. He used to go fishing. He loved fishing. I mean, the night that the event took place, I mean, he came into he was up in the local pub and he was dropped home, and my mother spoke to him and asked him how the weather was outside, and he just said it's windy and it's cold. And I was in bed around 11:30, 12 o'clock, maybe. He came in and he threw the covers of the bed back and he lay on the bed for maybe 5 seconds, 10 seconds in his clothes, and he got up and left the room. And seeing as he was in his clothes, I assumed he was going out to get changed into his bed clothes or go to the bathroom or whatever. And I woke up the next morning and he still wasn't back.
So, oh, my God.
And
did you work with Matthew Bernard? Did you work together?
We worked together on the home farm. Yeah, definitely. If I needed a hand, you picked up the phone and rang Matthew, and he'd be the first lad to, you know, he'd come and give you a hand and he'd leave again. And his brother, he'd love it, have it. I don't even think we ever said thanks to each other.
Of course. I know it well. But apparently a lot of people said thanks to you, because one of the things I see now is that someone said on the Saturday before Matthew died, himself and Bernard did a job for a local man and didn't charge him. Is that true?
Yeah, well, Matthew himself, I wasn't involved at all. I wouldn't be any good at that line of work. But a fella that he did work with, he was doing a job for him in a garage, I think they were putting up shelves or something, and he worked on the Saturday night until 9:30 and finished off the job, maybe had a little bit to finish off, and when Anthony, the man in question, went to pay him, he wouldn't take any money for doing the job. He was quite happy to do it and just help him out, you know.
Say with us, Bernard, Leon Colby. Leon, good afternoon.
Well, Joe, how's things?
And it's your older brother, unfortunately, who died by suicide. Jason, your brother. Leon, how do you remember Jason?
Oh, he was just very easy going. I've been playing a lot now.
Leon, I'm going to get you a better line after this break. Take your time.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. We've been contacted by Ben Connolly. Ben is in Crosskeys in County Cavan, and he wants to raise awareness of mental health issues, especially among young men. He's been sparked by the death within 4 weeks of each other of two neighbours, Jason Kobe, who was 21, and Matthew Gaffney, who was 19. And out of the blue, unfortunately, the two men died by suicide. Leon Kobe is the older brother of Jason. Leon, can you tell us about Jason?
A real easygoing kind of lad, you know, with a smile on his face and trying to help out as best he could. My older brother, so kind of looked up to him every way.
Sorry, Leon, we'll either have to try and get you to, if we can, in this day and age, to a landline or something, but that line is just... it's just dreadful. Ben, in terms, and Leon, but our condolences on Jason's passing. That's why it's really important that we have you on a decent line to do justice to your, to the depth and strength and indeed humanity of your story. Ben, in terms of raising this issue among young people, I know you're doing Movember, as a lot of people are, but and talking and contacting programmes like this, what reaction do you get locally when you say to people, can we talk about young people's mental health?
At the minute, like, probably beforehand, it probably, you know, it wouldn't really be talked too much. Like, you don't, until it hits home, you know, people try to dress it up or ignore it. Like, I lost a cousin 6 years ago in 2 weeks, Stephen. From the same village as well, we're all from Crosskeys, and you know, at that time you kind of think it's a once off, you know, this will not happen again, you know, it's one day, and then when it does happen again, like at the minute there's nobody that in our village now that'll turn around and take anything lightly from anyone, but it's just there's people out there, like even ourselves, like people that's struggling or whatever, just as Father Jason said to us twice at the two funerals, like people have to realise, like when somebody makes this decision, there's no tomorrow. You know, there's no more going for a pint with your friends. There's no more, you know, going out getting something to eat or going out and kicking ball, playing PlayStation. You know, like even though I understand people, they see it, like, when somebody's in that place, you know, that they think they're doing good. But like you listen to Bernard and Leon there, and there's nothing worse than that, yeah. Joe. Like, there is nothing. Like, I know from my own family and that. Like, I have a sister at home that, you know, she can't walk or talk. Like, and there's a picture of Stephen, you know, say up in our kitchen there. And, like, her and Stephen would have been the best friends. And every so often you catch her, you know, just staring at the picture, you know. And that just, you know, like, it just breaks your heart sometimes, you know. Just, you don't get over these things. There's no recovering. Like, if people have to realise how serious Joe's suicide is and how badly it affects people. Like, I wouldn't know much about mental health, really, Joe, or maybe the right things about it, but the only thing we do know of is, you know, the effects after it. That's what we do know, and there's nothing worse, to be honest.
And as you say, one of the reasons you're doing it is to show your support for the lads, for the two boys that died so tragically. To say you don't blame them, and you want to say to other lads of the same age or who might, especially in the pandemic we're going through, the age group that's been affected most badly, as we're hearing, we now live in an era where when you say to somebody, how are you, it's not just how are you, it's a how are you, and we mean the question, and we're looking for, if you have a detailed answer, well then give us a detailed answer. You say, no, I'm not feeling great. I'm cheesed off because of A, B, C or D, and I don't know who to talk to. And as you said right at the start there, Ben, I take 1,000 calls looking for that conversation than the one call you got to tell you that Jason and indeed Matthew had died so tragically. Bernard is still there. Bernard, who's Matthew's brother. Bernard, The effect that Ben describes, which is the generality in the area, and it's obviously so devastating on him, I can't imagine the effect that Matthew's passing would have on his immediate family like yourself.
Absolutely, Joe. Yeah, it's definitely very tough to take. It's the disbelief, you know, sleeping in the same room as him.
Yeah.
Every, I reckon, hour, you'd wake up at night and you'd look across the CZ there and you still don't fully believe until you look across and see that he's not there, that it's actually happened.
I'm told Leon is back on a better line. Leon, tell us again. Well, you didn't get a chance to tell us about Jason, your older brother, who died on Monday, the 7th of September.
Oh, well, he was just a very easygoing kind of lad. Smile always on his face. He always tried to help everyone out the best he can. And he's my older brother, so I kind of looked up to him in every way and followed in his footsteps. It's only the two of us in the house. It's just me and him, and two of us grew up together. And he kind of brought me out then with his friends when I was kind of coming into secondary school, and he introduced me to what his kind of life was like. And he wasn't much into the football now as much as I was. He's mad into his machinery, and him and Daddy used to go to auctions together and be in the lorry together. And it was just very unexpected now. It's just something you did not think was going to happen the day before. He was flying, and he wouldn't think there was a loss on him.
And at one stage, Leon, he had gone to Australia.
Yeah, he was in Australia this time last year. This time last year, we were waiting on him to come home. We were organising a surprise 21st for him. So we were waiting on him to come home. He came home and surprised Mammy and Daddy.
Brilliant.
He told me, so me and one of his friends up to the airport and picked him up. And he didn't have a clue about the party. And he was delighted then when he got the surprise for the party. And didn't think it was going to be his last party now. His birthday there last week. And
He
only had to visit the grave this year now. It's not a nice thing at all.
So it was this time last year when he landed home for the surprise?
Yeah, just around Christmas. Another few weeks. We were just waiting on him now around this time. We didn't know when he was coming. So.
And he was your older brother. And I know your age difference is 3 years, and it's just 3 years the other way, so to speak, with Bernard and Matthew. But he was an older brother in terms of advice and minding you and looking after you.
Yeah. He's just the one I looked up to. And two of us kind of had the same group of friends. Like, my friends would have been his friends and his friends would be my friends. And we all got on well, like a big circle of us. And he was a very popular lad and always out and about, and just didn't expect it at all.
And again, when you say that you didn't expect it at all. Bernard said the exact same about Matthew.
Yeah,
that he was in good form up to the tragedy.
Yeah, it wasn't a loss on me. He was with us and my two cousins there the night before and the Friday and Saturday. And wasn't a loss on me. He was laughing away and joking and having the crack. Wouldn't think there was a loss on him. Tried his best to help everyone else out in any way he could. And it's just tough now.
It's a mystery. We don't know. It's a terrible illness. It really is a terrible illness that befalls people, especially young men in Ireland. Bernard, how can Bernard and stay there, Leon and Ben? But Ben, who's the best person to ask about how they can get involved and help you in this campaign, Ben?
We've done it through Facebook, the fundraiser. So, I think if you look up, it's Ben Lads November. I think that was true. Or you can find it in my Facebook profile.
We'll put the details up on our website, as we will of the Samaritans and SOS and SOSAD, the SOSAD and PA the House. Father Jason Murphy. Jason, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you doing?
Good. Jason, you had the unenviable position of 4 weeks apart officiating at the obsequies for the two boys.
Absolutely. it was a dreadful time, and I suppose the ongoing aftermath is still very raw and very painful for everybody. Mm-hmm. It was a terrible. Both there were two Monday mornings apart, and both Monday mornings I would have got a call early in the morning about the death of these two boys, who I knew since they were very small children, one of them from about 1 year of age and the other about three. I knew them growing up. They were the loveliest little lads, the happiest little lads going. Yeah. Their parents and their families, you couldn't ask for better. And even Ben, I listened to him. I know Ben since he was a child. But all of them, decent, ordinary, hard-working people, the Colbys and the Gaffneys. The Colbys have a quarry there and very hard-working, and so be it with the Gaffneys. They are a farming family, very hard-working family. Mm-hmm. And these two boys, I know it's nearly... You hear it all the time that these two boys were just lovely boys, but they were exceptional. They were just such good-humoured boys and full of fun and full of life and very involved in their communities and as I say, very hard-working. And, like, I can't describe, I just can't. And I suppose, and for anybody that has ever been in this situation where you go to a field and you see the body of a young boy lying in the field and his lifeless body lying before you and his parents kneeling down by his side and his friends kneeling around him. You just can't describe that. Or to go to a house, as with the Gaffneys, and they're one of their three fine sons, you know, dead, and they look helplessly on. There's no words you can say. There's nothing you can say that can assist or help in those moments. Mm-hmm. You're just there, and that's all there. We're very lucky here that we live in such good communities and such closely connected, because the neighbours all came in and supported them over those days. And then, of course, lockdown came. That was the horror of it, as of course, so many families experience. And then the outreach that usually would support them, their neighbours and their extended family, and the like of myself and other priests in the area and good people, they can't visit and they can't, you know, meet these people in their pain and their hurt, and they're journeying alone at this time. That's the greater horror of all of this, that they are journeying alone without the support. And then you have fine young men like Ben and his friends coming along in trying to support in whatever way they can. And but as I say, nobody can, unless you've gone through that experience of suicide as a family, you cannot come to realise the heartache and the hurt. And I think young people have to come to realise this, the devastation that is left in their wake. Mm. And it's not just their lives that are ruined, but it's families, there's communities that will never be the same again. You know, if the family of a suicide victim is never, ever is the same again. They spend their lives picking up the pieces. It's like as if there was a massive hole in the ground and they're stepping around to try not to fall in.
Yeah.
And it's there. It's constantly present. It's there all the time with them. As so many people keep saying over and over again, you know, to reach out, to be able to say, you know, to be able, like, for young men, like, I taught Jason in school for 5 years in Bethany College, and I knew him inside out. And as I did Matthew and Bernard and Michal, the brothers, and Leon there, as you're talking about, I knew them inside out. And such fine young men. And you feel, what went wrong that they weren't able to talk? What happened in those years? That's this masculine or this culture of masculinity where we're not able to reach beyond and to say those words, I can't cope. These were words that came from Elaine and Jerry Colby, from Kathleen and Michael Gaffney. It wasn't me that said them. They said them to me. If only he could have said to me, I can't cope. Mom, I need help.
Yeah.
If only they could have said that, how things would have been so different. And for any young person that's out there, if they could only say that to somebody, be it a teacher in school, be it a workmate, whatever, someone that's coming home in the van from Dublin with you, from work,
do you know,
in a simple conversation, do you know, Pat, do you know, Joe, I'm not able to cope at the moment. I just need a bit of help. And, you know, anybody will reach out and put them in the right direction. Because the alternative is, as we know, and death, if you choose suicide. Like, there is, as I said, And I don't think we can understand that as young, in our minds as young people who are impulsive and everything, that there is no tomorrow, that you're not going to wake up, that there'll be nobody reaching across the chasm of death to help you. It's not a cry for help, suicide, because nobody can help you. There's no cry for help there because nobody can reach across. That's the sad thing, to see hundreds and hundreds of young fellas standing in tears in a graveyard, looking into a hole at somebody, their friend, their son, their brother being buried. And they can't help. That's what Bernard and Micheál and Leon and Elaine and Jerry and Kathy and Michael are saying, we couldn't help them and we can't help them now. And they're standing helplessly on. And we all are. And we're trying, everybody's trying to pick up the pieces. And as Ben said, you're nearly afraid to wake up some mornings of a Monday morning. From Mondays afterwards, you're nearly afraid what's going to be this week. It became, you lived in fear of who was going to be next. We were looking at each other, even in the graveyard, looking at, is there anybody here? Because Matthew was there at Jason's funeral. He saw the devastation. Yeah. And the poor fellow then, a month later, he himself died. Sorry, Joe.
No, it's so powerful. I mean, beginning with Ben's point, which I see people taking up everywhere, I take 1,000 phone calls from someone who wanted to talk through a problem and receive a single one phone call on a Monday morning to say one of my local lads has died. And you've echoed that exact phrase, Jason. If I find it difficult at this remove to actually frame thoughts and questions, I don't know how you did it, and you did it so eloquently there and so powerfully for the families. Jerry Maguire has contacted us from Donegal. You're listening to this discussion. Jerry, 1857 15 815. You want to talk about the Owen Maguire Trust.
Yes, Joe. It's a charity we set up after Owen died by suicide. But I was just saying to one of your girls there on the phone that when Owen died, there was 8 suicides within a 3-mile radius of Convoy Village, which is incredible when you think of it. And a neighbour, I'd say a quarter of a mile down the road from us here, we passed the wake. Owen was in the car with me, and I said to him, I said, look, isn't that terrible? And he says, yeah, look, he said, that lad must have having a lot of worry on his mind. Yeah. Within less than two weeks of that, Owen was dead.
Oh, God.
And it's funny, I know these two lads in Cavan, I didn't know them. This is the first I've heard about it. No. Up here, they don't publicise suicides too much. Yeah. You know, they don't. There's another situation here where you find, and a lot of people say it, 2 o'clock in the morning, a single car crash where it hits a post or a wall, and a lot of people have suspicion that.
Yeah, we don't. Unfortunately, we don't know below, and we don't know what befalls anybody in any given situation. What do you hope to do in the Owen Maguire Trust, Jerry?
Well, we help people. We teach them gardening, how to grow vegetables and that. But there's something I would say, like, to people around. Anywhere where there's a suicide, it's talk to their friends, talk to people in the community, and don't be afraid to say to them, have you ever thought of suicide? Have you ever thought of suicide? Simple thing like that could trigger somebody's mind that would maybe had it in their mind.
And would talk about it.
Would talk about it. And if you knew, like, if I'd have known, Owen's, there was, I think there was one after Owen. But before Owen, there was quite a lot. There was 8. There was cousins that went off in a field. 2 cousins, and both of them, girls. You know, it's like there was no, Owen showed no sign. He was the nicest guy. Everybody loved him. He'd help people. He'd do, like, it just reminded me when one of the lads there said that one of the chaps did a job and didn't charge somebody. Owen was like that. But before, for that couple of weeks before he died, I knew he was different. He wasn't getting out of bed early. Mm. He was lying, and we thought maybe he's after having a drink. He was 29. Maybe it's a hangover. But he was obviously suffering with depression, and we didn't cop it.
Yeah.
You know, but like.
And he didn't. He didn't realize that there would be so much help available, and there would be so much understanding. And even as we listen to Ben and Leon and Bernard, first and above all, Father Jason, given what he does and how long he's much older than the two boys. But like I'm living in that area now. I know I could ring Ben, I could ring Bernard, I could ring Leon and talk to them. I wouldn't feel, and I'm sure it's the same. People feel the same about you, Jerry.
Joe, if I'd have thinking of it, I would have sitting down with Owen.
Yeah, of course.
And having a heart to heart chat with him and saying, Owen, have you ever thought of suicide?
Yeah.
You know, a simple thing like that might have changed and might have opened him up, and he'd say, well, I did, but it's this, that or the other.
Yeah, if you broke your arm, Owen, we'd bring you to a hospital. If you you have suicidal thoughts, we'd help you as well. It's the same thing. But I'll
give you an example with
of.
Letterkenny, with the hospital in Letterkenny, and this has come from one of our members of the charity who happens to be a counsellor. She doesn't counsel. We don't do any counselling because PA, the house,
yeah, of course, yeah,
there. We leave that to them. We approach it in a different way.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
But this girl told us that there was only last year there was a married man who actually said to his wife he was thinking of suicide, and he went to the local doctor. The doctor gave him his pills, you know, whatever pills he gave him, and He went home. That was on a Tuesday. On a Thursday.
Yeah, I don't want to go into individual stories, Jerry. Stay there with us for a moment, because I want to bring Sinead in. Sinead Lane. Sinead, good afternoon.
Hiya, Joe. How are you?
Your point, please, Sinead. You're a young woman, 21.
Yeah, so I'm actually from Cavan as well. I would be from the Pennandale. And I actually did know of the two young lads that died by suicide, unfortunately, and my deepest condolences to both the families. And I wouldn't have known them well, but, you know, you just kind of know people from around. And I myself have actually lost two other friends. They're separate to the young lads. Two friends to suicide before I was the age of 20.
Okay, Sinead, hang on. Just stay with us, because I know you want to talk about two other friends. So we're moving on to a separate narrative, so to speak, and I also want to get a better line. Ben Connolly, Bernard Gaffney, Father Jason Murphy, Jerry Maguire, thank you all. And again, condolences on the death of two very, very young men, Matthew Gaffney and Jason Kobe, in the last, 8 weeks. 51551, Matthew.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
We were contacted by a young man in County Cavan, Ben Connolly, who wanted to raise awareness and talk about the death by suicide in the last 2 months, 4 weeks apart. Jason Kobe, who was 21, and Matthew Gaffney, who was 19, and their brothers subsequently spoke to us. And then the priest who officiated at the funerals, Father Jason Murphy, spoke at Lent. And now Sinead Lane is on the line. Sinead, you said you heard, unfortunately, about the two boys who died, but you're only 21, but you know of young women, unfortunately, who've died by suicide as well.
Yeah, so unfortunately, two girls that I was friends with had died by suicide. And they were, like, I was would have been friends with them, but there has been other suicides in mostly in Cavan Town as well, from young people, not that, ones that I wouldn't have been as friendly with, or ones that I wouldn't have known personally. So it's just to make the point that there really is an issue in Cavan the last while. There's been there has been completely unnatural number of suicides of young people lately. And it's absolutely heartbreaking, because it's just, you know, you don't even want to look, you know, on social media or anything, because you just know you're going to see that it's happened again. And it's just every time it happens, you keep asking yourself, when is this going to stop? It's just really difficult. And it's just scary, because...
Yeah. And what you see, the problem is, the challenge is that unfortunately, nobody knows at any one time what overcomes somebody to bring them in such a dark place.
But that's the thing,
what's the conversation you have with your pals, without obviously mentioning anyone in particular, both in terms of either your pals or people you know who've died, but what way would the conversation go, Sinead? Is it you're baffled or...
It's just disbelief. It's just, how has this happened again? Do you know? And I remember the first time suicide touched me personally, it was actually Father Jason Murphy who gave the funeral mass. And it was the most heartbreaking mass I've ever been to. And, you know, the chapel was absolutely packed. And the words that Father Jason used were just, it was so beautifully done. And just, he really, really stressed. And he made a point of stressing the finality of suicide.
Yes. Which you did hear today.
And, you know, it's just, I think people don't, I think a lot of people can relate to being down in the dumps at some point, you know, not to belittle it by saying that, but I think everybody has had experiences. And when you're in that headspace, you really aren't thinking about the finality or the future or the impact on friends and family. And it's just... It's really a lack of resources and services, I think, in Cavan. That's what I would put it down to. Do you know, there's not, like, I have a degree in community and youth work myself, so I kind of have a unique standpoint where I can see all points of view. And there really is nothing for people. You know, there's a huge influx of drugs lately in the community, and, you know, there's nowhere for anyone to go and say, you know, I'm having a problem with drugs, or I'm struggling with alcohol, or... Do you know, and if there is one or two places there, like there's a drug and alcohol service in Cavan Town, and I don't know now what their status is now, but they were actually having their funding pulled from them, and they don't know if they're going to be able to, you know, survive. And it's the one service serving Cavan and Monaghan, I think.
And I'm also conscious, Sinead, during the lockdown, which has been going on now since last March, that a lot of services can't actually be they schools, literacy. I know schools are doing their best. Community drugs projects can't do one face-to-face work.
No, it's just, it's
there's
awful.
Nothing that can replicate that.
No, there really isn't. And it's, you know...
We're going to have to try because, as you say, and Father Jason said, it's, I'm paraphrasing now, but what that's, death by suicide is a final... answer to a temporary problem.
Exactly. And it's just, it's a complete lack of funding from the government as well, Joe. Yeah. You know, like, where's the youth workers? Where's the community workers? You know, that's their job, you know, to work with these young people and be a support for them. You know, where's, like, I know there's a couple of services in Cavan, like So Sad, as was mentioned, and it's an absolutely amazing service, but it's just, it's not enough, you know. It's
okay, Owen, say with it, Sinead, because Owen McDermott, you all know from 2FM and beyond, has been listening and wants to talk to us. Owen, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. Your angle on this, Owen, so to speak, your perspective.
Well, it was just one observation I wanted to throw into the mix, Joe, because I was kind of listening to the really passionate pleas and sincere pleas and kind of going, if only these guys had reached out, there would have been people there for them. And so I talked, you know, I had a bout, I was never suicidal, but I had a bout with self-harming after a relationship breakup in my kind of late 20s. And for nearly half a year, Joe, of engaging in that behaviour, the terror of talking to somebody and kind of exposing that vulnerability that you can't quite understand yourself, and I assume it extends to if you're feeling so low that you're suicidal, the terror of admitting that was so great that it was prohibitive to actually doing it, which and I mean, like, it seemed to make more sense to continue self-harming than it did to make that leap and get over the terror and say to somebody, I'm in this really destructive space and I need help. And I kind of feel like the it's okay to not be okay message, that drum has been so brilliantly beaten, that which is a great thing, but just to not underestimate how terrifying it is to reach out. Like, it seems like such an obvious and maybe easy step, but in the communication of that message, I guess I wanted to say that it's terrifying. And maybe that it's not portrayed to be an easy thing, if only. And I don't know what the answer to that is. I'm not kind of presenting an answer to a problem. It was just more an observation, you know.
The size of the challenge that young people face. But Owen, would people around you have known you were self-harming?
No. Okay. No, it was kind of easy enough to kind of keep up the veneer, the pretense that everything was okay. And I was listening to the caller saying, you know, one young lad lamenting someone in their community who had died by suicide, and then 2 weeks later he was dead, and the guy had no idea. You know, I guess, it's easy to front.
But it's also important to have people like you saying, be not afraid. Be not afraid. Even though, as you said so powerfully there, Owen, the hurt, and I don't just mean the physical hurt, but the hurt and what you're inflicting on yourself, and almost the shame in terms of self-harming, that was not overwhelmed by the what would it be, the how difficult a fear of judgment that would have. What it took you to say I need help only happened when that propulsion became bigger than the propulsion for self-harm.
Yeah, and also as well, to anybody listening who might be in a delicate state, as soon as I did chat to somebody, it's hard to impress upon people the release, the freedom, the weight lifted. And again, it almost seems like cliched words at this stage, but it's so true that the whole problem shared, problem halved mantra, it's very real. So if you are in a bad space, kind of feel the fear and do it anyway and reach out.
Yeah, and as it was Ben who said at the start of the program, I would say, yes, Sinead, yeah, sorry.
As well as Joe, you know, as well as that, Joe, people, so there is people who do reach out, you know, and like I know even myself, I have reached out and asked for help and it hasn't been there and it hasn't been given, and that's frightening. Do you know what I mean? Whether it's a lack of, you know, qualification, or because schools have a big role to play in this, you know, they don't just teach. They're there to be a support for young people. And I think, you know, they need to get a lot more on board with these kind of things. And I know it's difficult, you know, when something like that happens in a school, but it's not always handled very well. And
I'm thinking again, Sinead, of the last 9 months and the fact that schools effectively either have been open, semi-open, or either way at all times under intense pressure because of nobody knew about this pandemic. Nobody could predict the impact it was going to have. Nobody can see the domino effect it has on every single aspect of society, be it from counselling.
I know, it's awful. It's really horrific. I know even myself, like when I was in school, and that was a few years ago, like, you know, I'd kind of be showing the textbook signs of these kind of things, you know, kind of outbursts of, you know, negative behavior and different things. And it was never pulled up with me. You know, it was never, it was never kind of signposted, or people are kind of afraid to get involved almost, I think, you know, because there's too much red tape, too much paperwork. But, you know, it's not going to end unless, you know, it's like a chain effect. It's like a domino effect, as you said. And Things need to be really taken seriously at this stage now, because it's actually horrifying, the amount of, and the young people. It's horrifying. I'm not even doing the justice, you know, the numbers that I have seen in all over Cavan.
Yeah.
And families, it's, you know, people, it's multiple people in the same families as well, you know.
Stay with us, Sinead, and Owen McDermott, if you can, because I want to talk to John. John, good afternoon.
How's it going, Joe?
Good. You contact us listening to this conversation. How does it affect you, and what's your response, please?
I've suffered with it myself from time to time, you know. I think the hardest thing is to talk out, you know. It can be the easiest thing to do sometimes, but I found having close friends really does help, you know. It's getting over that macho side, you know. Peening down a wall, really, you know. I just find with young lads, really, what I've noticed is they use the gym to show a physical macho side, you know.
Yeah, good point, yeah.
You know, deep down there's something waiting to be cried out there, you know. you know, it's tough. It is. It's hard really listening to them stories today, you know. Kind of touched me there today, I have to say, you know. That's a good friend there last year, so, you know, that's why I thought I'd call in today, you know. It's just reach out to your closest friends,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, just talk. Just talk. Just let that be the message, just talk. A thousand conversations your buddies will have with you rather than one phone call to say you're no longer with them. They would do a thousand conversations, which is the message. But as Owen McDermott said, that to get over that barrier where you're either your behaviour in your mind, which is bringing darkness, which is the nature of that illness, it's an awful illness, or your behaviour to your body, as in Owen's case, he said he was self-harming. It's just so strong. And then the push against you, I don't want to be judged or whatever, but that is the side that has to win. That is the side that has to be overcome.
But okay. Not everybody has that, Joe.
I know.
The support system and the friends and the social capital, you know, that's the thing. It's not everybody has people to talk to.
And as well, Joe, on that note of people maybe reaching out and then the response that they get not being up to par or not being helpful, I know St. Pat's, the Walk in My Shoes resource online, they have a great resource about what to do if someone comes to you saying that they are in a tricky place, how to handle that, what to say, what not to say. So people can find that online on the St. Pat's, the Walk in My Shoes resource. It's really helpful.
Yeah, okay. And Samaritans, as we'll get on our website, but Samaritans at 24/7, 365. And the number is 116123. If you want to email them, it's joe@samaritans.ie. But the phone number is all the time, 116112. And remember the phone number of a buddy in the screen on your phone. Ring your buddy. Remember what Ben said. I'll take 1,000 phone calls asking to have a chat rather than to get one phone call to tell me that you've passed. Owen McDermott, Sinead, thanks indeed, and indeed John and Jerry Maguire before that. 51551, wash your hands, but 1850 715.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Michael Cronin is in Cork. Michael, good afternoon. You're listening to the conversation about young people who are dying by suicide. Go ahead, Michael.
I am, Joe. Thanks for taking my call. Joe, this time last year I was in a psychiatric hospital after having a mental breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
I had been very depressed for a long time, for many years, and nobody knew it. I hid it from everybody. I was like somebody maybe living a double life, where I was always smiling and laughing, but deep down inside, a completely different person. The one thing I will say is, and I think a lot of the kind of buzzwords and jargon around mental health, when you're in a really bad place, mean absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like it's okay not to be okay, or, you know, it's a temporary solution or a permanent solution, temporary problem. For me, the only message is, and there should be only one, if somebody's feeling really bad or feel like they want to take their own life, is ring somebody.
Okay.
That's it. Just ring somebody. Even text somebody. What I did on the day that I thankfully chose not to take my life, because when I was sitting in my car, the first thoughts are, right, what's the best way to do this? And I don't know why, but thankfully, I just rang my doctor instead.
Great.
Within, I'd say, 3 hours, I was admitted to a psychiatric hospital. I'm very aware that this isn't everybody's experience.
Okay.
I can only talk about mine, and mine was extremely positive. Extremely.
Can you, looking back on it now, can you give us a glimpse of, if you can, I don't know whether, into what was the switch that went, you came to a junction.
Yeah.
You came to a crossroads. One road led to where you are today, thank God. The other road, as you say, would have led to the end.
Yeah.
Why did you take the wonderful path you took? Because
to be 100% honest, I'm not too sure. Sometimes I give an answer and people don't like it, and I never know how to phrase it properly, but I think I just wasn't brave enough. I know that sounds like an awful, awful thing to say. When I'm asked, is it because of my wife and kids? And I have to honestly speak about this. I think there's only one way to speak about mental health, and that's honestly.
Yeah,
and it wasn't. It was not because of my wife and kids.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't because of any of my family. Because I honestly believed at that time that everybody would have been better off without me.
I had no doubt in my mind. Yeah, that is the evil nature of depression. It tells you that.
It does. Our minds are incredibly powerful tools that will, if they grab hold of that negativity, they will just keep getting deeper and deeper and deeper. Our minds are just as good as they are. They can be just twice as bad.
And do you accept, Michael, that you had an illness that could be treated, that it was an illness? Depression is not a decision. It's an illness.
100%. No, I do feel that. And I'm on medication for my illness.
Great.
Which, then again, you talk to other people and people have different attitudes about it.
You sound like you're sensible about it. I know the ups
I am,
and downs,
Joe,
yeah.
because one thing that was very much emphasized to me by any psychiatrist or any psychiatric nurse or therapy nurse was taking antidepressants is one small part of getting better and staying better. Probably even the smallest part, definitely the easiest part. It's all about looking after yourself. It's all about being selfish about yourself insofar as spending time trying to make yourself better and keeping yourself better. I was put on a mindfulness course paid for by the HSC, which I found brilliant. I practice mindfulness every day. I practice meditation every day, which is outstanding. And I'm not happy kind of person at all. I eat fairly healthily and I try to exercise as much as I can. Unless you do all of those things, I believe the medication won't work.
But I think you're so exceptionally honest in saying that when people say think of, and everyone missteps on this, everyone, led by me, by the way, but when you say, people say, well, think of your children or your family, you actually do think about them, but you think about them in the exact opposite way to the way people who don't have this illness think about them, and the way you think about them is they'd be better off if I wasn't here.
100%. And there was zero doubt in my mind. Now, I would say to myself, look, of course they're going to be sad. Of course they'll be sad for a while. But then they'll move on.
And
then they'll be fine because they'll realise all their troubles are gone because I'm gone. And there was no convincing me otherwise. You know, when I was in a particular frame of mind, state of mind. You know, it took me, obviously, to hit a certain point.
And there are, and your other point, you mentioned mindfulness and meditation. There are so many today, which is changing on, but it changed a lot even during the pandemic. You can engage with mindfulness sessions that are live, but you don't have to give your name, address, and tell them who you are. You can just sit back and listen to what's being said.
There's so many apps out there as well. You know, even Google body scan, just a simple body scan, which might be a 10-minute, even a less, kind of, it's like a breathing exercise that just helps you just clear your mind. You know, it's not a difficult process, to be honest.
And why not? Okay, we're talking about mindfulness because I helped you, Michael, but like mindfulness.ie, it's an Irish website, on Monday, Wednesday at 8 p.m. and then on Saturday, tomorrow at noon, they last 30 minutes. You just contact them, mindfulness.ie, There's no limit to the numbers. You don't have to speak. You don't have to give your name and address. You don't have to give your image or whatever, but you can participate and listen and sit back and be guided, as they say. That's just one aspect of it, but there are... There are so many things, but again, to get over that darkness.
For me, the first step, and I think this should be taught in schools. I think there's two things should be taught in schools. First thing is just if you're feeling any way, you know, really bad in your head and you have suicidal thoughts, or you feel like taking your life, just ring somebody. That's all. Yeah. It doesn't matter who.
I think you said as well, text somebody.
Just text somebody. Can I talk?
Give us a buzz. Yeah, I just loved it. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like when I was sent home from hospital, I was told to have an emergency buddy.
Great.
Which was fantastic. So I picked somebody, and there were occasions. There was one occasion where, I ended up getting a bad panic attack that day, which is the first and only one I've ever had, and it was terrible. But I just got myself into a situation where everything was just getting on top of me again, and I just made a phone call. And for those 10 minutes while I was chatting, it had the desired effect. It brought me back down again, made sure everything was okay. And emergency body sounds like a very plastic name, but everybody should have an emergency body. Really should. If you're feeling bad or crap, just ring somebody, just text somebody. And I also think kids in school should be taught to look out maybe for signs and not to be afraid to say, are you okay? Maybe a bit drastic in school, but we should never be afraid to say, have you had suicidal thoughts? I do you feel like hurting yourself? We should never be afraid to say that. We should never skirt around the
Is this illness that you have called depression, is it telling you to do harm to yourself? Is it trying?
There you go. I suppose you're saying that to somebody, and none of us can diagnose depression. You're saying that to somebody, maybe that hasn't gone for any help.
I know.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's not...
And Michael, you said to me earlier that you were... depressed. I don't know whether is there an adjective there, severely, chronically, or mildly depressed, or whatever.
Clinically,
okay. You knew, but nobody else knew.
No, Joe, no. I kept it from everybody.
Wow. And how did you do that?
Just
in terms of helping people, what would I have seen?
Nothing.
Yeah.
My wife didn't know, Joe. I came home from. My GP with a letter to bring me to a psychiatric unit in Cork in the DUH. And my wife didn't even know.
Yeah.
My brother who brought me in didn't know. My mother, nobody knew. Absolutely nobody knew. So I was able to keep it from people.
Okay. So stay with us, Michael, please. Sure. I have Anthony and I have Joseph, but before I go to them, because I want to give them this time that's available, we'll take this quick break. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Today's live line, in terms of the reaction, which we could never can predict, but that's the nature of live line, came from a young man who contacted us, Ben Connolly, at the start, about two friends of his who died by suicide very, very recently, two young, gorgeous young men. And Ben's, the sting of Ben's call was, phone me 1,000 times to tell me you're unwell, but that will be worth it. I'd never want to get that phone call again on the Monday morning to say one of my pals or my buddy's brothers has passed away. 1,000 times phone me looking for a conversation. Anthony, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe? Can you hear me okay? Yeah?
Loud and clear. Can you help people in terms of understanding and dealing with this awful illness?
What I'd like to say first is, condolences to those poor lads and girls who have taken their own lives tragically like that. About 8 years ago, I hit a brick wall. I was feeling a bit down for a few months, maybe probably a year, probably beforehand. just going through the motions of stuff, you know, like it's the way, you know. And then I ended up having a breakup, and within 2 weeks later, I lost my job. So just one particular day, it kind of overwhelmed me. I can't even describe the thoughts. It came very sudden to me. Like when I've heard a lot of your callers saying that it was like a build up, and it was like whatever. But this kind of was like a snap decision for me. Like, you know, I just kind of said, this is my easy way out here is just to commit suicide. Like, do you know what I mean? And then, so I attempted suicide, but gladly and happily I failed. You know, it was the only thing in life that I was like, glad I actually failed at doing, you know what I mean? But to be honest with you, Joe, like, it was like a cry for help, I think, more so than anything else. And I think that's a lot of what happens with a lot of people. It's a cry for help. And that what that lad said at the very start will resonate with me. And if I ever speak to any of my friends, you know, I talk to you a thousand times before I get that one phone call. You know, that's some slogan to have, you know what I mean? And my life absolutely done an absolute 360. I hit rock bottom. I became very, when I got brought into the hospital, I spoke to, you know, the doctors. They put me on a mild antidepressant, which I never thought I'd ever be on because I was a happy-go-lucky lad, like, you know. I went on these tablets. They helped me no end. I done my counselling, which helped me no end. Exercise. I can't say that enough. You know, especially in these times with the COVID, as much exercise as you can get for those happy hormones. Also, you know, and then I ended up becoming very close to my father, who I had a very kind of distant relationship with. I felt like I could talk to him whenever I needed to talk to him then. And I have friends around me who were listening to me. And my life has changed. And I've helped one or two people from going down the alleyway I went down.
Right.
But just talking to them and telling them, you know, my story. And when they've hit rock bottom, they rang me and said, listen, can we talk? And I say, absolutely. Yeah. And we go down and they say, look, I had this thought of doing this. And I said, no, it's not the way out. And the biggest thing for me, Joe, was, I was, this is going to sound terrible, I don't mean it to sound, but I was one of the lucky ones because I got to see what people's reaction was when they heard I tried to do that. You know, my own children and stuff like that. I just did not realise the devastating effect of me not being here would have had on the people that were left behind.
Right. Which as Michael said, normally goes in the opposite direction because you say, okay, it'll be devastation, but That awful illness tells you, oh, they'd be better off without you, which is the wrong, which is just no, wrong.
And nobody's better off without you.
Of course.
We're all put on this planet for a purpose. I really, really believe that. I'm not. You know, I didn't start believing in God in a big way or anything afterwards or like that. But I believe we're all here for a purpose, and I believe that we're all here to help each other. And there's always, if you're the last person, my dad was such a hard man when we were growing up, and me and my dad are so close now since that time. And I thought my dad would have been disappointed in me that I tried to take the easy way out, as I would have called it. Sorry, no, I don't mean that. It's the way I would have called it. And my dad wrapped his arms around me and said, I want you. We need you here. Yeah. We need you in our lives. We need you to be here. And, you know, it resonated with me and it stayed in my head forever. And as I say, I'm in a new relationship. I have a great job right now. You know, imagine if it inevitable would have happened. I would have missed out on all this. I would have missed out on the kids growing up. I would have missed out on all of the things that I'm reaping the rewards of now. Like, you know what I mean?
And we would have missed out on your guidance as well, Anthony. Stay with us, because Joseph wants to talk. Ailish wants to talk. I have a whole list of people. Joseph in Wicklow. Joseph, your thoughts, please, on this conversation, which unfortunately has meaning for you as well.
Yeah. Hi, Joe. I'm in my 60s now, but over 40 years ago, I was 20, and I attempted to take my life. And I was under severe pressure, and there was some blame attached to it and guilt and all this stuff. But I didn't realise how to get out of this black hole as such, you know.
Right.
So I attempted suicide, and luckily I survived. And when I woke up out of it, I realised that my family loved me and they really cared for me and they gave me every support. Yeah. And it took a while to get over this, you know, the sadness and the depression and, you know, but it was a close call, you know what I mean? I could have died, but I survived. And then with family support and the love they showered on me, and, you know, I said, why did I attempt such a silly thing? You know, why did I attempt? It's sort of understandable being in such a dark place at that time, but there is hope. Yeah. And I just want to offer young people hope, because I'm in my 60s now, and this is over 40 years ago. I was 20, and I hear about a lot of the poor young people who have died around that age, and I just wanted to offer them hope and peace of mind, and look to your family and share the problems with your family and your friends, and there is hope, and life is worth living.
Okay, well said, Joseph. Ailish is on a mobile phone. Ailish, Conathan Ailish, you're a third year in psychotherapy. Well done. Would you say you suffered with depression all your life? Your thoughts, please.
I would, absolutely. I can relate it just really the whole way back, but particularly the last 10 years, I would say. And just listening to those stories, it's so sad. And I just remember, I know what it's like to be in that dark place and to feel that you don't deserve to be here. And like that man just said about letting people know that there is hope.
Mm-hmm.
I know for so many people, it doesn't feel like things can get better, but to just know that it can, it really can. And the times when you can't hold hope for yourself, let other people hold it for you. Let us hold it for them. Let their family hold it for them. Just to know that things really can improve.
And I what's resonating with me is the last three callers who were saying, unfortunately, the illness did overcome them, and they did try and do things. But once they survived, thankfully, they all said that they realised that was not the answer. That was not the answer. That was not the answer. And there's so much to live for and to love for. In your course, Ailish, do you talk a lot about people who die by suicide and what overcomes them and what overwhelms them?
There's a lot of experiential learning, so people bringing their own experiences, maybe people they would have known, family members. So there is a lot, and even in my own experience, wondering what makes me so different. What makes me different? Not, I mean, as in, it's just the line is so small between the people that actually go and do that and complete and you know it's final, and those that don't. That it's just a fine line, and just to be so lucky to be on the right side of it. And I know I will never be the person I was before all of that, but I am so much happier just in myself, and an internal happiness that just wasn't there before.
There is hope, and there is help. Thanks indeed to all our callers today. Ailish there, finally. Back on Monday at 1:45, Damien Chanel and Sad Maeve Mooney is the BCO. Richard Burns, the researcher. Today's producer was Lisa Marie Berry, and the series producer is Rebecca Meehan. And Ray Darcy is next.